The End of the Rainbow. Sure, 'tis a drunken old fool you are, Seamus. Ach, and you're a fine one to talk, Cormac, so you are. You've been putting away enough Guinness to flood the Shannon, so you have. Ah, me old friend, that's as may be, but I at least can keep a sane head on me shoulders. Fancy you believing in the crock of gold at the end of the rainbow. Crock is something else, I think. And what about those wee green leprechauns, too? Still dancing in your garden at night, are they? The two men often happily swapped tall stories that became more inventive by the minute. It was their favourite pastime. The more the Guinness went down, the taller and more imaginative the stories. The difference between them was that Seamus really did believe in some of the old ones, wanted to believe them to be true. Cormac chortled with glee at his good friend's innocent gullibility. For years he'd been pulling his leg, a gammy one at that, about the wee green men. Just as Seamus had never left off reminding Cormac of the time he saw the donkey with two heads. That one had followed a particularly good evening's drinking. Ha! Go on, mock me. You'll see. I'll prove you wrong yet. Just you wait. And slapping Cormac on the back, Seamus tossed off the last of his Guinness and wove an unsteady path to the pub door and out into the moonlit village street. A full moon was riding high that night, illuminating the soft contours of the hills, casting deep shadows in the valleys, making it easy for Seamus to see his way without a light. So bright was that moon that even the green of the trees could be seen. It was a night for witches to be abroad, and the wee fairy folk too. But none of those did tipsy Seamus see as his feet led him instinctively down the familiar dirt path towards home, scuffing up little clouds of chalky dust as he went. A stiff breeze blew, and small puffball clouds chased each other across the night sky. Not even the occasional brief squally shower could dampen the old man's spirits. It was a beautiful night, a night for seeing things, if one had the eye to see them, a night for imagining. But what was that coming into view as he cleared the brow of a hill? Something very odd. Something to do with the Guinness, maybe? But no. There ahead of him, arching from one side of the valley to the other, as if summoned by magic from one of those scurrying clouds, he could see what could only be a rainbow. But a rainbow at night? That was not possible, surely? He stopped in his tracks, rubbed his eyes, looked again. There was no mistake, it was a rainbow, and such a rainbow as he'd never seen in all his 80 years. It was like a gossamer veil thrown from one field to another before him, the marvellous rainbow colours just faintly visible, painted by a ghostly brush. Now, if ever there was going to be one of those legendary crocks of gold, it would be there. But how to remember the spot? There was only one thing for it. He needed his wife. As fast as that gammy leg would let him, Seamus hurried down the path to the moonlit whitewashed cottage in the lee of a hill not far ahead. Drifts of wood smoke curled from its chimney, creating fairy and dragon shapes, for those who had the eyes and mind to see them. Seamus flung the front door open, slamming it against the parlour wall, almost snuffing out the guttering candle on the table just inside. His wife looked up, startled. "Quick, wife, fetch a spade and a bucket and come with me. Hurry, hurry!" "Ah, Mary, Mother of God, man, what's got into you?" But she did as she was bid and followed him into the bright moonlit night. "Well, what is it? What are we doing? What on earth have you brought me out here for?" "I'm after telling you. It's one of them rainbow things over there, just around the corner. There'll be a crock of gold at the end of it for sure." "Well, 'tis mad you are, Seamus, for we all know there's no such thing. Mad, mad. But I'll humour you. Where is it, then, the rainbow you're talking of?" On rounding the bend, there was, of course, no sign of the miraculous coloured arc. Along with the little clouds, it had dissolved, quite vanished. Seamus turned and headed back home, an expression of the most forlorn on his wrinkled face. "I'm telling you, Mary, it truly was a rainbow. I saw it with me own eyes, and sure, if we could have found the end of that strange thing, there'd have been gold for us and our wee grandchildren. Oh, what gifts we could have brought them. There would have been smiles and laughter and plenty of food for their table. It fair breaks my heart to think of what could have been. Well, Seamus, never mind. We'll have a wee drop when we get inside and cheer ourselves up. Och, 'tis all fairy talk, that talk of crocks of gold. Never you mind. And Mary drew a thick, heavy curtain across the doorway, shutting out the night and its mysteries. Here's some gold, here. This is real, right enough. And lifting a cobwebby and precious bottle of fine Irish whiskey from its hiding place at the back of a shelf, she poured its amber treasure into two glasses. The couple drank in silence, lost in their thoughts. The next day, life returned to normal, but at the back of Seamus's mind there remained a tiny glimmer of hope that another wonderful rainbow might just appear that night. But no, though he retraced his steps eagerly up and back down the road, there was nothing. A full moon still, but not a cloud in sight, not a single drop of rainbow-creating rain. So that was that. Two nights later, Seamus had given up hope. He put all thoughts of nocturnal rainbows right out of his head. He took himself off to the village pub once more, and with great good humour tolerated another gleeful ribbing from Cormac. This was the way they'd always been, theirs a comfortable habit of mutual leg-pulling and affectionate verbal abuse. Seamus had kept quiet about what he'd seen, for fear no one would believe the story of a rainbow at night. They would never let him live it down, for sure. It was, after all, the stuff of fairy stories. In any case, he no longer quite believed it himself. That night, the moon was coating everything in silver again. Imagine his amazement on coming over the hill on his walk home to see, yes, it truly was, another rainbow. And this time it was very close to the house, for within its faintly coloured bow he could see the little thatched roof and walls washed in silver moonbeams. Seamus stopped, blinked, rubbed his eyes. This was definitely no figment of his imagination. There it was, as real as real. He moved forward a few paces, but the rainbow didn't shy away from him, as they always do. It stayed put. Seamus walked forward again, further this time, but the rainbow didn't budge so much as an inch. Scarcely daring to breathe, he hurried as fast as he could to the cottage. This time, as if the rainbow might perhaps hear him, he opened the front door as quietly as he could and whispered excitedly to his wife, "Come, Mary, come quickly. I tell you, it's back, that rainbow, and it's not moving at all. We'll dig for that gold, and it'll be there, I'm sure, as I see you standing there before me." Disbelieving and convinced her husband had finally gone mad, Mary went to the door and peered nervously out to see the extraordinary sight of a rainbow arching right over her head at a time when no rainbow should be abroad because it was the middle of the night. The couple snatched up spade and bucket and followed the rainbow colours to where they sank into the ground and began frantically to dig. But no matter how hard they dug, nor how deep they dug, there was nothing, no gold, not even so much as one tiny piece of it. Gradually the rainbow shimmered, shook itself, and faded away completely. The two old people sighed and tramped despondently back indoors. 2 weeks later, and Mary and Seamus had packed Christmas treats and small gifts for their grandchildren into their ancient and almost equally small car. It would be a long drive to Dublin and the little terraced house where the couple's son and daughter-in-law lived. For those used only to empty and isolated roads in the country, city roads were terrifying. Seamus drove at a snail's pace with great care, nose almost touching the fly-spattered windscreen. "Mum, Dad, at last you made it, and only an hour late." "Never you mind, my lad, you watch your manners. We're here now. What about a cup of tea?" And Mary headed straight for the kitchen and the kettle and the teapot. Seamus, meanwhile, was placing their gifts under the tree. They would soon be opened, for it was Christmas Day. But first the meal, a modest one, given the family's limited means. "Father, what's this?" Their son had found a basket, more of a picnic hamper, contents carefully concealed. Oh, it's just some of those chocolate coins that you all love so much. A treat for the children. But it was more than just a small pile of chocolate coins, for underneath them, their weight almost breaking the bottom of the basket, were other coins, not chocolate, wrapped in gold foil, but gold, real gold, glistening, shining gold. For it happened that there were fairies by that isolated old cottage the night the rainbow appeared, and they had watched the old couple frantically dig, seen their disappointment, taken pity on them. And the next morning, when the rainbow had quite vanished, had left their gift of gold from the end of that miraculous vision outside the front door. I'm sure I don't need to tell you of the joy that fairy gift brought that Christmas day. But Seamus knew he'd never tell Cormac about the crock of gold at the end of the rainbow, for he would not believe him at all.